Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm sitting across from Christian White, who's here to talk about Nowhere Child.
Thank you very much for having me. It's good to be here.
Pleasure. We are intrigued by this book. This book has had a kind of a fanfare before it's even hit the printer, because you were awarded an award for a manuscript. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. It won the VPLA, the Victorian Premier's award for an unpublished manuscript. So it kind of, it went from something that was, when I entered, I assumed that not only would I not be shortlisted, but it would just, nothing would come of it. And I sort of used it in a way to, there's a deadline. So, okay, well, I'll work toward that deadline. So I was obviously shocked and blown away when it was shortlisted and ultimately won. In fact, I'd got an email from them saying, it was just a very generic email a couple of days before with just general information that would have gone to every single person on their list. But I was so sure that I'd not won, I read it weirdly as a rejection letter. I don't know, it was so strange. So I was so sure that I assumed, hang on, they sent me a rejection letter. And afterwards I went back and it was nothing. I'd made it up in my head. it's been amazing. It's really just kickstarted everything, really.
And this gets this award gets booksellers excited, because I think Graham Simsion, who wrote the Rosie Project, and then Jane Harper, who did The Dry, has also won this award. So there's a kind of a heritage now, there's an expectation now of good things coming out. This is an award that seems to be spotting those kinds of manuscripts that may just take off.
Yeah, it's very, very, very good company to be in. A little bit intimidating, but very, very good company to be in. And I sort of look towards those, Jane Harper in particular, and I just look at her and think, I just want to copy her career,
Yeah.
So I'm on track to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You started step one, done.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, tick.
So the manuscript that got handed into the award, how different is that from the manuscript that's been now reaching the printers and being published?
It was structurally quite similar, but there was at least 20,000 words that didn't need to be in it for starters. Yeah. This is really redundant things that I had, you just miss, and certain things that I guess every writer does, but certain things I'd written 30 times, like crunchy dead leaves. In every scene, there was dead leaves on the ground. It was crazy. But then also a few key structural things were sort of moved around, and, an event that takes place quite late in the book, it takes place in the middle of the book now, took place quite late. So there was a lot of shuffling and a few really great ideas that I'd almost forgotten. I reread the book recently, and I'd almost forgotten how collaborative the editorial process had been. There's some things in there that my editor just came up with that you think I've been planning it all the way along. I think in spirit and structurally it's very similar, but it's a lot tighter now and a lot more. I know there's just a few things in there that make it just elevate it a little bit more.
I want to talk more about the editing process later. Can we just, for those who haven't, we're in a privileged position, we know what it's about. I've read it. You've read it. Can you tell everyone who's listening what it's about?
Yeah, of course. So it's about a photography teacher in Melbourne, Kim Leamy, and she's approached by this American, just sort of this mysterious American accountant who says he's investigating this 30-year-old mystery about a little girl who went missing in Kentucky in a small town called Manson. And he says, I think you're that little girl. And of course, Kim is initially thinks that's ridiculous. But then she sort of starts to scratch the surface of her family history, and a few things stop adding up. And ultimately, she travels to Kentucky to really get to the bottom of this mystery and find out, is she this girl? And if so, why was she kidnapped? And then in alternate chapters, we unpack that mystery. So alternate chapters take place in 1990 in this small town in Kentucky. And it's a little bit of a creepy small town because there's a lot of Pentecostal snake handlers there. So that sort of that world is explored a bit as well. And yeah.
Well, I've read it. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I I get a lot of books on my desk, and your publishers of a firm are very persistent. They said, look, I just want to do just a taste it, John. So I did. I tasted it, and I just went whoom, straight through it.
I was so glad to hear that.
Yeah, I was done. I couldn't stop reading, and the balance between the 1990 bit and the today bit was just so well done. And I did not guess anything in the end, and I won't do any spoilers here. I love to try and work things out, and I was miles away from
the... that's such a satisfying thing to hear, because you're probably like me. Whenever you read, mysteries and thrillers, you want to be smarter. You want to beat them. You know, it's like, no, I'm going to win this.
Yeah.
And so it's so satisfying to hear that that you didn't. That's the best.
Can I ask a few questions about where you came from and the novelist? You turned up. You've got your debut novel going to all bookshops around Australia. Who are you?
I've been sort of slogging away at a writing career for, I'm really old now. It's 15 years maybe or longer. You know, I've written since I was a kid, and my dream was always to be a novelist. But I thought that going into the world of film and TV would be more quote unquote realistic, which is insane in itself because it's pretty competitive. So I studied screenwriting at RMIT, and I started to get a bit of work in the film and TV world. But I never kind of, that itch was always still there. And actually, when I started to get work, I'd only been a full-time writer. When I found out I'd won the competition, I'd been a full-time writer for maybe 5 months, and I was so poor, and I was like, I haven't made the right decision. And so it was sort of, as a result of that, when I sort of made writing film and TV my job, that need to write was still there. So I'd actually, when I started writing the book, a couple of years ago, it was a way it was still my hobby, you know? So even though I'm doing film, slogging it away at film and TV, I still have that extra need to do it at night and on weekends and stuff like that. So this is a very rambling answer to that question, but...
Was this the first manuscript or the other manuscripts
I've attempted about five, yeah. And I think this is the second one I've officially finished, and certainly the first I've shown anyone. The others were in different genres and just... but pretty bad. Yeah. But this idea I knew was... I've been sort of looking for that perfect idea that would be big enough to fill a novel, and this idea just felt right. So this is the first one I've thought, okay, well, I've got to show someone. Because that's the part I'm bad at. I'm fine with the discipline and the process and all that sort of stuff, but showing it to anyone is just hell. But so satisfying when, now you're getting such a huge positive response, and it's the opposite of that. It's incredible. So it's all sorts of emotions.
And what sort of, because when I read it, the American scenes, I pictured sort of scenes that I'd read in Stephen King and things like that. What sort of reading were you... devouring as a kid and as an adult.
Yeah.
Because I find that a lot of writers are, they do devour a ton of books.
Get one book out of them. Yeah, I'm definitely one of those. Stephen King. Yeah, like you said, absolutely. I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and even his books that aren't great are still great. You know, they've got this sense of. This real sense of place and nostalgia, and so I think he was a huge inspiration in writing the book. Even though it's not a horror, I did draw on a lot of inspiration. Little things he does, little tricks, like he'll talk about someone down the street, but he'll give them a name, and just that little thing is that does so much, So I sort of I drew a lot on Stephen King and also a lot of thrillers. I'm a huge Gillian Flynn fan, and Dark Places has a similar time structure. It's not quite the same, but it's that split time thing that I thought, what a cool way to tell a story, and also a less intimidating way to tell a story. In a way, you're writing, instead of writing 100,000 word piece, you're writing 250,000 word pieces. So it's sort of, but then I read all sorts of books. I love Haruki Murakami's one of my favorite writers. And growing up, I read Enid Blyton, and then sort of got on to know, Roald Dahl, then Kurt Vonnegut, then Chuck Palahniuk. So I sort of went through this real sort of cycle. But thrillers and mysteries and horror, they're the ones I keep coming back to. And I just, they're the ones that, there's all these different reasons to read, but the most powerful one for me is just this sense of escape. And thrillers and mysteries are the ones that I just, you just want to live in them. So, yeah.
You mentioned the Kurt Vonnegut and like, because, you know, I that interest in writing and the possibilities of writing and sort of wandering around the yard that is writing all different attempts and different styles and the like, that seems like you've sort of had a look.
Yeah.
So what is it that drew you to the thriller as a kind of a... Was it the idea that you went, oh, God, that's great?
I think it was a bit of both. I mean, when I was into Kurt Vonnegut, I tried to write like Kurt Vonnegut. And then I got into Chuck Palahniuk, I tried to write like him. You know, so there's definitely a sense of that. And so I think through that, you kind of eventually develop your own style. And I think mine was... I think it's more suited to thriller because it's I think it's influenced a bit by film and TV as well. That I try to be quite succinct and just to the point.
I see it all. As
oh,
well.
Good. Yeah. So I think that was part of it. And I think that the thriller mystery genre is just, it's so fun to read, but it's also so fun to write. And it's quite difficult because you've got to manage a lot of different intersecting stories and all that sort of stuff. But it's just so fun. And I knew, and I was actively trying to think of a thriller or a mystery, and I'm a big true crime fan, so I was listening to true crime podcasts and reading true crime books, and so I knew I wanted to write something in that world, not necessarily a detective novel. You know, I'm really drawn to, I don't mind the occasional detective novel, but I'm sort of drawn to crime stories that come from a different perspective. So I think this was the idea that I thought, yeah, let's just run with it. And some things you've got to, I certainly found this with film and TV, that once upon a time, I wanted to be a comedy writer, and then I just learnt that I was really bad at it, but I'm good at writing drama and horror and thriller, and so I just, sometimes you just have to lean into your strengths, I think, and try to put a bit of humour in where you can.
I want to go back to the discussion we had started earlier about the editing process, because one of the things that a lot of writers on the other side, before publication, don't really understand is just how that relationship with editors is and how important it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that process. I mean, sometimes you'll go through three or four different people that get involved, and sometimes just you and one particular editor who really gets the work. And that flexibility, I think, to allow someone into the story, to allow to make those kind of suggestions, is the kind of the beginning of a mature author.
Yeah. I think that wasn't... I'm really good at killing my darlings. I'm not really attached to any one thing. So I think, and sometimes to a fault, I think. So for me, that process, that collaborative process was so, so fun. You know, you were just sitting in a room, and because there's, this book is, there's lots of moving pieces, we just had them all out and we were just discussing them. And it was actually a really incredible experience because you've got these people in a room taking your story seriously, talking about characters you've created, naming them, having their own thoughts about them and disagreeing with you about certain things, which is great. But I think also...
This person was a real person, right?
Yeah. No, it's just me. Yeah. Yeah, no, real people in a real room. Usually it's, you're sitting by yourself. But then another part of it too was, I think when you write for film and TV, you've got a whole bunch of producers that really it's not just yours. And I think being open to ideas, it's that sort of cliche, but more heads are better than one, you know? So it's, if you close yourself off to certain ideas just because you're emotionally attached, then you just miss out on a lot. And I think you need to be careful. Like, you need to, I know early in the process, I was really eager to address every single note that everyone sent me, every single publisher, and I got lost a little bit in that. So yeah. I think it's, through that process, I learned to trust my instincts, but just be open at the same time, which is kind of hard when you've been in this world and no one else for so long, and then someone comes out and says, well, that doesn't make sense. And you're like, oh, God damn it, they're right. You know, but you don't want them to be right, but I think leaning into those problems is beneficial in the
it's
end.
It's amazing how they find all the stuff you put under the carpet. Like, I'll just put that under the carpet. No one will notice.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I'll fudge that bit and no one... Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And they lift the carpet and bring it out.
What's this?
Like, yeah, look at all this garbage. And your face goes red. And you're like, I'm sorry. I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, because I mean, I found in my process, you know, there are things in it where they're going, oh, I make a suggestion. I like that better than what I just came up with. You know, there's...
Yeah.
And it's okay. Like, cause a lot of writers don't... I mean, I've read something about Anne Rice recently, and she apparently wrote the first three or four books and then just said, no editor's ever been touching another line of my stuff.
Wow.
I don't think she wrote very well after that. But
you know, yeah, I think I've just read the three. I mean, the Vampire Chronicles, the first three, they're probably the only ones I've read.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they suffer. Would suffer after that.
It seems completely wrong.
And just a missed opportunity too. I think that you... sometimes I hear a new idea and I go the other way where I think I get so excited just because it's new and I run down that sort of path with it, and then I realize, oh, hang on a second, it doesn't work for this reason, you know. So I think there is a balance there to strike, but definitely it's a great process. It's one of the funnest things if you're open to it. It's one of the coolest things just to sit in a room and talk about it, and it's amazing. Yeah.
So you've got the Australian experience, but you've also got UK and the US publishing the book. So do they have their say in what's in the book?
Are
they slightly different editions?
There's those two, the US and UK, and there's also Germany and France, and there's 15 in total.
Amazing.
So all of them had all of them had notes. Some of them were contradictory, which was really interesting to me. And I think we finally struck a good balance. So certain ideas... I mean, certain things like the title, for example. The title was originally Decay Theory, and every single person except for me agreed that Decay Theory won't work as a title. And so one of those things, like, okay, well, if everyone's agreeing on that, they have to be right, you know. But then other occasionally...
I agree with them too.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I know, you know, it's so there you go. thank God. I think that when you get conflicting things, you sort of... It just makes you think... Maybe what they've suggested isn't right, but they've suggested it for a reason.
Yeah.
So maybe you'll look at that and address that and figure out what you want. But then occasionally there were certain things that, you know, that the American publisher called out, for example, that the German publisher specifically said they liked. So it was sort of, you know, so then you kind of just work what's best for the story.
I was thinking when we were first talking about you having an editor and the editor you, but this is... This is something else, and all those people being involved.
And it was just notes, and I think that next time around I'll deal with them a lot better, because I think I wasn't overwhelmed, but because if you get those sort of notes and you're writing a script, all right, I've got to figure out how to address every single one of these. Unless there's something you really, really strongly believe in, and then you can fight for it, but more often than not, it's they've made that note for a reason, and you'll lose that fight. So I think when I got all those, I was a little overwhelmed in that, oh, I've got to address every single one of these. And actually, I delivered a part of the manuscript that basically affirmed, said, you've just taken way too much out, you idiot, you know. So I went back and put it all in, and I was putting stuff back in thinking, why did I take this out? It's so good. And so I think you can get in your own head, especially as a new writer. I think that I'll get, you know, I'm working on the second book at the minute, and I'm already... using so many lessons I've learned to build on, you know. So I think all of that stuff, even the, you know, these things that you feel a bit embarrassed about and these things you kind of screw up, are good, and they're good to happen. The sooner the better, because you learn from them, I think.
Yeah. So you're in the process of writing right now?
Yeah, writing the second book now. So
is it connected, or is it completely separate?
No, it's a new standalone. It's the same genre. It's a mystery thriller, but it's a new standalone story. So yeah, I think without saying too much, I feel personally that The Nowhere Child has quite a finite ending.
So I
didn't want to... I sort of wanted to get in and out, you know. One day I'd love to write a sequel, you know, but right now when it's my first one, it's hard enough to write, you know, God, one novel's enough, you know, for that world. I've used up all the good stuff, you know.
Well, congratulations on the enormous pre-success you've had, and we have big high hopes for this one selling right through Christmas. And being seen as the thriller of the year all over the world, it sounds like.
Fingers crossed.
I'm very excited for you. Thank you very much for coming and talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
And you can get Christian's book at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.